What's up, everyone? Welcome to an all-new edition of the Sports Report Podcast with Brad and Clay. Coming up on today's show, we will get you caught up on the NBA Conference Finals and what to make of the NBA coaching search. Clay, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Internet's been a little slow, of course, but, you know, other than that, switched over to Explorer. It's actually working a little bit, so... I'll go classic and actually use Internet Explorer.
See, I mean, there you go. You just need the fundamentals, the old school classic stuff. The vintage internet.
Old school, man. Luckily, we don't even know what Internet Explorer is.
Exactly. How many people still use Mozilla?
Oh, I actually had a class a couple semesters ago that only worked on Mozilla for some reason. Yeah, I'm really a Google Chrome guy myself, though, in all in all.
You are?
Yeah, I think I like Chrome the best. Safari's probably the worst.
Yeah, I can't. You know what's funny? I can't even get into either one of them. I tried Chrome, and I just can't get used to it. After a while, I just can't get used to it. But okay, Safari's the same way. I actually use a Google app on my phone than I would Safari.
It's all pretty much the same. I mean, you know, it's all basically Internet Explorer, you know what I mean? Just a little different.
Got their own versions.
Kind of silly, really. I don't know. You don't pay for them, so I don't really know what. I ain't the technical one. That's your job, dog.
Nah, man, I still can't figure that stuff out.
I'm good just to use Microsoft Office, you know what I mean?
There you go. Give me the old Office. All right, man, so we have a lot to get to here in today's podcast. Man, we have to recap the crazy Western Conference Finals between the Thunder and the Warriors. We've seen really a tale of two different games in that series. And also out East, you have a series is pretty much already over, it feels like, even though we've only played one game. I mean, everyone watching that game the other night was basically tweeting and posting the same thing. Even current NBA players, who, by the way, are not in the playoffs, were already saying that this series is over and that the Raptors had no chance to win a game over the Cavaliers. So we'll get to them in just a minute, but I really want to open up this show, Clay, with the main event out West between the Oklahoma City Thunder, who stole game one in Golden State, against the Warriors, and now we're looking at a series all knotted up at one game apiece after the Warriors were able to pull away, really get a win in blowout fashion last night.
Yeah, 27-point win last night. They kind of asserted themselves. I was watching. It was a pretty, you know, pretty close game at halftime. You know, the Thunder kind of made some mistakes in the first half. How many turnovers did they have right there in a row, like three or four? Yeah, the Warriors had a nice little run right there in the first half, and I think they were, up 8 at halftime, and then they came out smoking in the third quarter, and I honestly couldn't stay away any longer, but at that point, I knew when Steph Curry started knocking down his threes, you know, it's hard to stop that team. Pretty much impossible. And, Golden State really looked like Golden State last night. It's going to be tough to beat them when they're playing like that.
Well, you know, what's funny is you talk about Golden State looking like themselves in Game 2. In Game 1, the whole first quarter. If you watch the whole first quarter, I mean, you had teams that were just really amped up for the series to start. They're throwing up threes that not even set their feet yet. They're just throwing up shots here and there. It felt like an all-star game opening up where people were just shooting at will. And then you had, what's funny though, is the only kind of matchup that you saw in the first quarter that really meant anything was the matchup between the coaches. You would have a little run there by the Warriors getting 6 points unanswered. So Billy Donovan would call a timeout. Right out of a break, out of that timeout, he would design a perfect play to get them a bucket, and then they would go on a little run, and then Steve Kerr would call a timeout, and just back and forth the whole first quarter watching these coaches duel it out. And that's really what carried them to get this game going, was the matchups and the adjustments that both the coaches made.
Yeah, I think Kerr did a much better job in game than he did in game one, you know, setting up the plays. And I'm not going to say Billy Donovan's been over his head. Obviously, they stole game one. I think they're still in this series. I mean, it's one game apiece, you know, going back to Oklahoma City. I mean, they stole home court. So, you know, it's really, you know, a really good job that Billy Donovan has done in his first year. So, you know, I don't think he's been over his head or anything like that. But he's got his job cut out for him. If Oklahoma City is shooting the ball like this, you know, Oklahoma City's going to have to match him. Durant's going to have, you know, a monster game like he did. Durant's going to play like he did in game one every game, I think. If he doesn't play like that in every game, they're not going to win. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, 26 in game one, ended up at 29 last night.
Really? Okay, maybe I got him and Westbrook mixed up. I thought Durant had like 30-something in game one.
Yeah, now Westbrook, he kind of took himself out on the offense where he didn't shoot quite as much. He only ended up with 16 points. But really only shot the ball 14 times and was really more the facilitator getting 12 assists. But KD, yeah. he's shot better in the second game, because in the first game he had played 44 of the 48 minutes of the game. So he was worn out by the fourth quarter. He usually gets a break, and they stagger their minutes, him and Westbrook, in the fourth quarter. They didn't get a chance to do that because the game was so just fast-paced, and they needed both of those guys on the court for the majority of the quarter. So he didn't get a chance to rest as much as Westbrook did, who, by the way, went bonkers in the third quarter. He gets 19 points. You know, after going through the first half of the game, really struggling to make anything, he gets in the third quarter and unleashes a couple threes, attacks the basket, gets 19 points in one quarter, and that really put them back up top to really control most of the second half and the fourth quarter there. So he gets a break right after that, but KD's still out there, and you can see him really forcing his shot to get it going, and it never really got there until later in game two.
I guess that's what I was thinking of, that big quarter he had. Yeah, he needs to take over games. Maybe not take over the whole game, but if he can take over a quarter or, you know, a big stretch run, you know, he's going to play, you know, like he's capable of playing and take over games at times, I think. And Westbrook, too. Westbrook's doing a better job of being a facilitator and a true point guard. But, you know, he needs to, if he has a chance to take over a game, if he thinks he can get by Curry and take advantage of him on the offensive end, then he needs to do that. And you made a good point the other day about, you know, I think I was actually talking to my buddy Carter. He said he thinks Westbrook needs to just back down Curry every time and try to rough him up, you know, try and get Curry a little, maybe not banged up, but, you know, maybe a little, you know, thrown off a little bit, you know, kind of rough him up a little bit, and that might throw Curry out on the offensive end. An interesting idea. I haven't really heard that, you know, but I guess, you know, Golden State could always switch, you know. That's the thing.
I mean, if they get a matchup they don't like, one of the best things the Warriors are good at doing is switching on defense, because really the matchups, if you're watching the matchups, who guards who on defense does not guard, you know, the same person or other way around. Whenever they swap sides, so you could probably back him down if he is on him, and I agree, if you get him, you know, enough in the shot clock, you get a little space there in isolation, he can back him down a little bit. You just hope that he's going to be able to be strong with the ball though, and Steph's not gonna be able to knock it out. That's the one thing you gotta watch out for.
Yeah, that's the thing. Curry's not the only player on the team, that's for sure. I mean, they can beat you from multiple ways. So, you know, obviously, Klay Thompson, first thing that comes to mind. But, you know, they got other players too. So, yeah, they're good at switching, like you said. So that would be kind of hard to do. But I think, you know, I think it would be a bad idea maybe just a few times, try it out and see. Maybe if you can rough Curry up a little bit, it might could throw a shot off. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get that matchup, you got to exploit it all you can.
Yeah.
But, you know, talking about the matchups here, we've seen a variety of different things thrown out both teams really in this series already. Warriors, of course, they go with their death lineup, which is, you know, at least spacing the floor. Draymond's pretty much the five. Really is a nuisance for the Thunder defense, who, let's face it, their best matchup, their best set is going out there big with having Serge Ibaka and Steven Adams and Enes Kanter. Having those guys on the floor at all times, going big like that, and having KD, you know, go up as even a two at sometimes if you can get it worked out that way, but mostly a three, it really works in your advantage, because that's one thing they did in game one is they really controlled the board on offensive rebounds and frankly defensive rebounds too, and that's what forced you know, good pushes the other way to get some easy baskets and second chance points for the Thunder.
Big difference in the game to me last night was play of the big men. I think Golden State's big men really outplayed Oklahoma City. Serge, you know, was non-existent on offense. Adams had a few. You know, he had 9 points. He had one real good move early in the second half that had a good move to the basket, but the shot just didn't fall for him. But you look at the Golden State, I mean, Draymond Green, you know, had his. He had 10 points, 7 assists. Bogut didn't do too much, only had 4 points. But coming off the bench, my boy Azili from Vanderbilt, he had a big game, I thought, off the bench. He made all the shots, had 12 points. Maurice Space, he had 13. So Golden State, you know, their backup big men, you know, with 25 combined points there. I thought that was really big for them last night.
It's huge because you look at the numbers going from the bench points, and the Warriors had 50 bench points compared to the Thunder, 29. Yeah.
AI had another good game.
That's what I was about to say. Right before halftime, it was, I think it's even maybe a 2-point game Warriors way. Andre Iguodala checks in the game. He runs off about 10 points in a row. He makes a three, gets a foul in the layup, and all this other crazy stuff happens before halftime. Ends up getting, you know, running off for 10 points in a row and pushing the lead out to, what was it, 8 or 12 points at halftime. So he really stepped out there going off for 40. And this was the big thing that was missing in game one, is their bench play. Some guys stepping up. You know, you look, you go to game one, Iguodala only has 6. Azili has 3. Spates is non-existent with 1. Livingston with 3. I mean, so getting these other guys involved. I know you can say that by the fourth quarter, they're, you know, of course, ahead by a lot, so they could throw more guys out there and get them more minutes. But these guys contributed key minutes earlier on in the game, like Iguodala does, closing out the first half. And then even Azili there for a while, going off for 12 points. And we saw Spates doing the same thing, where we've seen Serge Ibaka really struggle in the playoffs, where, you know, with a particular matchup, like going back to the San Antonio series when he was guarding LaMarcus Aldridge. He really had a hard time guarding him. And Spates kind of presented not really, you know, the same, of course, same all-star level that L.A. does, but really giving him more options, and the footwork of Maurice Spates got him moving, and got Serge moving, and able to open up some shots for Maurice Spates. Shooter bounces here and there, but he was able to contribute, and that's one thing that the Thunder was not able to do with the bench points.
Absolutely, yeah. I thought that was... And you look at the players coming off the bench, I think Golden State has a much better bench. Maybe not much better, but definitely I think they have a better bench. You know, the Thunder, nobody on their bench really scares me that much. I mean, Deion Waiters is a pretty good player. You know, you got Kyle Singler, Nick Collison, Anthony Morrow, and these are just, you know, nothing that great. And I don't know. I like Golden State's bench a lot better. I really do. I think that's why Golden State won 73 games. I think it's a big reason why they won won it all last year, and they'll probably win it all this year. I mean, you know, when Spates and Skilly can play like that, and Iguodala off the bench. And even Sean Livingston and Barbosa, I mean, they're not the players they used to be, but they can still, their old selves can still come out, you know, from time to time. So I definitely like the Thunder's bench. I think they got one of the best benches, you know.
I mean, Golden State.
I mean Golden State. I really like Golden State's bench, much more so than Oklahoma City's.
Yeah, I mean, the one key guy really coming off the bench for Oklahoma City is Enes Kanter. He was up there and votes for the Sixth Man of the Year. And he's really been more, I mean, that's what's crazy to think about, is you think of him more of a starter because he gets so many minutes. He's really grown as a defensive player in this playoffs, because that's not what he was known for in the regular season. He's one of the worst defensive players in the regular season all year. But then the playoffs kicked in, he's ramped up his intensity a little bit, and he's able to get some key stops when they need him. And he's been able to actually make some good baskets in the paint, get some offensive rebounds, and get the offense going in that way as well. But you mentioned that the Warriors, their defense, their bench play, really, if they can get guys like that rolling off the bench, they're going to be a tough team to stop, because it's hard enough to control Steph, Draymond, and Klay when they're all cutting and going off double stack screens here and there and open up shots and cutting to the basket. It's hard enough to guard that, but then you add in some guys coming off the bench like Sean Livingston or Andre Iguodala or Festus Ezeli, who can get you some points and some really progressive minutes while the starters are on the bench getting some rest. I mean, it's going to be a tough night for any team who's playing a Golden State Warriors team when they're right.
You're right about that. It's going to be tough for anybody. I don't think the Cavs bench can match them. The Raptors, which the Raptors are not going to get by Cleveland. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, top to bottom, I think this Golden State team is the best team. And a big kudos to that goes to their bench.
Let me ask you this: what happens if we swap these two games around and Golden State blows out the Thunder in game one and then Thunder win game last night? How are we looking at this series any different than we are right now?
That's a good question. Even after game one, you know, I got work asked me, you know, you think of, you know, he said, you think the Thunder can take the series? And I was like, I'm not really sure. I still like the Warriors. And, you know, and then after last night, really still think the Warriors will win the series, you know, probably in 6 games or so. But if it was the other way around, you know, and, you know, the Warriors, you know, kind of let their guard down in game two, you know, then, you know, you might be feeling a little different. I don't know. I think either way, game three is pivotal, as you know. As everybody knows, game three is the most pivotal game of any series, especially when it's one to one. So, really, game three will tell all. I think Golden State will win game three after last night. I think they're just clearly the better of the two teams.
It's going to be interesting to see this Thunder team go home to Oklahoma City and and that fan base is, of course, one of the best ones in the league. They're going to go home. They're going to be tied up with the Warriors. And if they, you know, to me, if they can get one of those two games at home, game three or four, that's really going to make this series tough, because a lot of people had, of course, said the Warriors probably in six. But, I mean, really, the goal for the Thunder to go out there and win game one in Golden State and get the first game of the series, that was huge. I remember watching the last 3 minutes of the game, and I kept, you know, shaking my head, thinking, I cannot believe the Thunder are going to win game one in this series. One thing we saw from Golden State in game one down the stretch was their poor decision making and their really carelessness of the ball. You saw late in the game where, you know, of course, we see Steph and Clay and Iguodala just throw up shots all the time and they go in and it looks so effortless. But when they're not going in, they look like bad decisions. And that's what we saw at the end of game one, was these threes that they didn't have their feet set. It was early in the shot clock. They didn't have the matchups they wanted, or they didn't exploit the matchups when they got them. They just looked less focused. They got a little frazzled, and when that happened, their decision-making got a little worse down the stretch, and that led to bad shots. And the Thunder, of course, out-rebounding them in that game down the stretch, that's what carried them to eventually win game one.
Absolutely.
So game two comes across, and like I mentioned, it was a close game going into halftime until Iguodala goes on that stretch, pushes the lead to about 8 or 10 at halftime. And then the third quarter, it gets knotted back up again. The Thunder go on a run. They get it close. And then Stephen Curry happened. He goes off for, what was it, 13 straight points. He gets a four-point play with Oklahoma with a technical on Kevin Durant. That gives him 4 points because he got fouled shooting a three. So he makes all four free throws. The best free throw shooter in the league, by the way. Makes all four of those. He's hitting three threes in a row. And he goes off for 17 points in the third quarter before he takes a seat and gets some rest. And at that point, when you watch all this happen, and then that crazy layup by Andre Iguodala where his head's down looking at the floor and he throws it up behind his head and it goes in and he gets fouled, that's when he knew things were going to go the Warriors' way for the rest of the game.
That's a good point. Sometimes everything just goes your way. And that was a big play in the game. You're right about that. And I was fighting just to stay away. But once Curry started knocking down his shots, it seemed like I quit fighting as much to stay away. I was pretty confident that that Golden State was going to. At that point, even before he really started heating up, the lead was already in the teens, I believe. There might have been about 10 or so, and then he really started heating up. And Oklahoma City was, Golden State was already pretty much in control. And when he started heating up, I knew the game was over. And I think they were happy to win game one and just ready to get back home and see what happens in game three. I really do. Not saying they laid down, but I think they kind of saw the writing on the wall. They did it. They stole game one. Let's just take this one in stride and get ready for a big game three, Not really ask for more if you're Oklahoma City. It would have been awesome to win both. It would have been crazy. But to steal game one, no one thought they were going to win game one. Did anybody give them credit? Did anybody think they would win game one, honestly?
I think every single person, the ESPN, writers, insider guys, picked Golden State to win game one.
Absolutely. I think Oklahoma should feel pretty good about themselves. They obviously got a huge game coming up. When is game three? Sunday?
Yeah, game three in this series will be Sunday on TNT, 8 p.m. Eastern. Can't wait to see what kind of adjustments these guys are going to be making. It's actually a pretty decent rest. You got Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, three full days. It'll be interesting to see what these coaches can draw up, what the adjustments they make, and hopefully everyone will be healthy and ready to go. We've seen a couple people like Steven Adams get banged up in the first two games like crazy. So hopefully his big club of a hand will be healthy a little bit, and maybe he can get some rest before game three takes place.
Yeah, you want to be a good series. I hope it's a good series. I think ultimately the Warriors will take it in six games. I think probably, but I'm still hoping that it's a good series. I hope every game's not like last night. I'm hoping every game is more like game one than game two. In all honesty,
Really, every game between these two teams all season, even in the regular season, has been amazing. Because, of course, we talked about it in one of our podcasts way back when it happened, when Steph Curry, that game, they were going back and forth. It's in Oklahoma City. It went to overtime, and Steph hit that long three-pointer almost a half court at the buzzer to win it. That was one of the best games I'd ever seen in my life, and it's between those two teams.
That was.
I remember tweeting out after that game, like, man, I cannot wait for this playoff series. And luckily enough, we got it.
We did, yeah. I feel sorry for our buddy Carter, you know, his poor Spurs.
But, yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought them up because I want to ask you a couple of questions about the Spurs. You know, last time we were here, we talked about, you know, still the Thunder and the Spurs series was still going on. You know, Thunder had taken control of that series, but wasn't sure if they was going to be able to survive and get out of there, and they did. So now, Clay, we look at, you know, a 67-win team in the regular season, one of the best home records we've ever seen in NBA. I think they were 40-1 in the regular season at home. Somehow they lost two games in San Antonio in the playoffs against the Thunder. They've kind of reloaded a little bit with Kawhi Leonard, getting LaMarcus Aldridge last year in the offseason, getting a big signing in free agent. They even get David West to take a massive pay cut. We're talking about $14, $15 million pay cut to play for them for 1 year to hopefully get a championship. He's going to the end of his career, and maybe we might have just seen the very last of Tim Duncan.
I think you're right. It's going to be a big offseason, I think, for San Antonio. I was talking to my buddy Carter, you know, before that last game against the Thunder, which they got blown out in, surprisingly to me. I thought that would be a close game, honestly. And he said it's going to be tough because, you know, he thought that, you know, from what everything that people are saying, that this was probably their last little run together. So yeah, it's going to be a big offseason. You got some young guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, but overall, I mean, Tony Parker's on up there. Manu obviously is up there. Tim Duncan. I mean, all three of those guys could, you know, retire at the end of the year. You know, they're old enough to. And even the backup point guard, Patty Mills, he's on up there in the years. You know what I mean? Oh, that's going to be a huge offseason, I think. I told Carter, a guy that I think they would consider, who's, you know, potentially going to be a free agent, that's Al Horford. I think he'd be a good, you know, because he's in Martin Budenholzer's system. You know, would he take less money and go to San Antonio? You know, that's a big question. But, you know, obviously he would only go there if Tim Duncan retired. I think he'd be a good fit. But at the same time, he's not as big as Duncan. I don't know. There's big free agents out there. Kevin Durant's out there. Carter mentioned him. You know, as a San Antonio fan, he said he really wanted Kevin Durant. You know, I don't. We'll just have to let that play out. But it's going to be a big offseason. There's a lot of question marks. I don't see them just tanking or anything like that. You know, they obviously signed LaMarcus Aldridge, a young player. So I think they're going to obviously build around him. But yeah, David West. You know, I think he's, well, how many years is on his contract?
He's a free agent.
Oh, he's just a 1 year deal.
Yeah.
Okay. They could, if say Duncan retires, you know, they could re-sign David West and start him. So there's a lot of, you know, different possibilities, but it's going to be very interesting. What do you think?
Well, we will know the fate of Timmy Duncan in about 2 weeks when, you know, that decision has to be made because there's a deadline on these things, and if he decides to come back, he needs to tell them at a certain point because that money he's guaranteed will come back for another year. So their summer has officially started. All this really goes into effect. If he does retire, there's a lot of options. I think one that we may see anyway, regardless of he stays or goes, is the San Antonio Spurs getting a guy like Mike Conley, who's a free agent out of Memphis. That whole thing they got going over there in Memphis, where the, you know, rough and tough team, it really took to their disadvantage this year when every single player on that team got hurt and they had to rely on, you know, pretty much 32 other guys who played at one point or started at one point on that team to carry them into the playoffs against a series against the Spurs. So I think Mike Conley would be a great asset. He's a younger point guard. He's not too young, of course. He's a really great character guy. It's exactly what Popovich is looking for, a guy who's going to run the system and not try to be, you know, a drama queen or whatever, to go out there and get buckets. He's going to go out there, run the offense. That's, you know, what he did in Memphis. He shot when he was open, but he passed the ball and ran the course of the offense when they needed him to, which was most of the time. So that's a good guy to get to either come off the bench or for, you know, if you're Tony and you're kind of getting up there in age. Of course, we saw him kind of get back to himself later on in the series. If you want to look at it the other way and have Mike Conley start and Tony come off the bench because he's a little bit older, use, you know, your minutes that way and kind of stagger the point guard a little bit. You can even have them out there at the same time if you get a great matchup that way. But Mike Conley's a great guy to look out for. for the San Antonio Spurs. I hear there's mutual interest in both of them, so maybe that will happen this summer for them. Kevin Durant's not a guy you can't rule out because he, of course, has been coached by Popovich, not only in All-Star games, but also with the USA team. Popovich is an assistant there. And now, you know, of course, this past year, Popovich being named the future head coach of the USA basketball team. So that's a guy they have a great relationship with. And, of course, KD has a lot of respect for Popovich and what he's done in San Antonio for, you know, so long in his career. So that's a situation where it's uncommon for the Spurs to go out and get the big-name free agent and pay him max money. And it's really hard to see them doing that 2 years in a row when they get LaMarcus Aldridge and then going out and getting Kevin Durant. Man, could you imagine that team with Mike Conley, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, LaMarcus Aldridge, and even Tim Duncan if he comes back?
That would be crazy. Of course, Kawhi Leonard, how did I forget the best player on the team, who's obviously a young guy. But yeah, they're going to be a good team with those two guys. And I think I can see it. Yeah, I think that would be a smart signing of Conley, maybe re-sign David West. I mean, you could have Conley, Leonard, Aldridge, David West, four of your starting five. And that's and somebody else at the three. That would be a pretty good starting five. So, I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon. They're really in a pretty good situation, I think. I mean, they've really done a pretty good job of they got their old guys that they built a dynasty with, while at the same time getting these younger guys and starting to build around them as well. So it's really a no-lose situation in a way. They might not be as good next year. They might be the sixth or seventh seed or something, but they definitely can, in a few more offseason, they can definitely rebuild that roster and really won't miss a beat.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and they're actually a little better off than we think because they have guys like Kyle Anderson, a draft pick they used. That's a young guy they're developing. He's getting better every time he steps on the floor. So you have him for the next couple of years. But you use expiring contracts like maybe even Matt Bonner, who the longtime third string center forward that comes on just to shoot threes.
I was about to say, is he still on the team?
Yeah, he's still you never hear his name anymore, but that's just a guy taking up a roster seat. So you could X him out. Boris Diaw is a free agent. If he decides to go to somewhere like Atlanta, that's another roster spot. Tim Duncan retires, that's one. You have Kevin Martin, it's an expiring contract as well, a free agent signing throughout the year this year. And you look at a guy who, Andre Miller, him and Tim Duncan, the two oldest guys in the league still, and they're on the same team. If they both decide to retire, that opens up slots. Patty Mills, he's really only been in the league for 6 years, not that old. He's about, 27, 28? So they still got some years out of him. He's still got, I think, a year or so on his deal left. David West. So they have a good five or six, potential opening spots for them to go out and sign free agents. I think they'll sign some of these guys back just to keep the core of their team. I think they will make a splash because there is so many big names out there. And if you're San Antonio, you can almost just pick and choose who you want because who wouldn't want to play for San Antonio and Greg Popovich and that team and that organization? We've seen people, the last 10 years really take pay cuts to go and play for them. David West was just the most recent example, but Kevin Martin was the face of a franchise a few years ago in Minnesota and places like that and Sacramento, and now he's reduced to 6 minutes off the bench for San Antonio just for a shot at a championship. So veterans get older and play more in the league, they get to that point where they just want to win a championship, and they'll do that, of course, with the best run franchise in NBA in the league in San Antonio. So I don't think they'll have any hard time finding someone to step in those spots. And even if they don't open up, they'll be good to come back next year and be, I think, one of the top four seeds next year too.
Absolutely.
What did your gut tell you? Does Tim Duncan retire?
I think he retired. I think they're all three going to retire at the same time. Tony Parker might play another year or two, but I think Manu and Duncan will retire at the same time. So I guess it's really up to them too, but I don't know. I thought they retired a couple of years ago after they won, their last championship, and they kept going. But now, not even making it to the conference finals. I think it's probably time for them to hang it up. So yeah, my gut kind of tells me they will. I think at least Manu and Duncan will retire, and maybe all three of them. You know what I mean? I could just see them all kind of retiring at one time. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, Tim Duncan's 40 years old now, and you really, if you watched him, especially, he was reduced to, We seen him play two games in a row where he scored 3 points together, and those two games combined. One of those was, of course, 0 points, the first time that happened in his career. A really awful game for him because he came in the first quarter and gets 4 fouls in the first quarter. Not sure how that happens, and ends up with 0 points for the game. So just watching him out there and the way the game's transitioning, that's so much faster paced, and they're spreading the floor, and it's all about shooting and moving and everything. It's really a big man's worst nightmare, the way the game is going, especially when you're as old as Tim Duncan is and kind of seasoned as Tim Duncan is. A guy who, of course, will go down as one of the best power forwards in league history. The game's just transitioning out of his repertoire a little bit. I thought the same thing watching him play the last couple of games. Like, maybe if they don't get out of this series and if they don't win the championship, maybe it's not for him to hang it up, because I can't see him going through another grueling offseason and regular season trying to get back in shape and run do all this other stuff. I can't see him doing that for one more year after the way he kind of played down the stretch at the end of the season.
I agree. It's been a great career. He's won many championships. I think it's probably best for him and the organization if he retires, open up that roster spot, and hopefully, and you know, allow the team to go after an Al Horford or another big man. I really think they'll make a hard push at Al Horford if Duncan retires. So, it just makes too much sense to me. Obviously, Atlanta can pay him more money, and they're gonna. I think Atlanta wants Al back, but I definitely San Antonio is going to be calling if Duncan retires.
I think you're right. Just like we said, they're going to have their pick of who they're going to select in free agency.
And Al would definitely think long and hard about it.
I think you take it if you're any guy like Al Horford, All Star guy. Of course, his family. He's lived in Atlanta the whole time he's been in the league. So you know you got to uproot your family and that community you've been such a big part of. It's the only bad thing about that.
They're never going to win. He's never going to win a championship in Atlanta. And I'm an Atlanta guy. I'm an Atlanta sports fan. They're my teams, but you know they've never won a championship. I was 5 years old when the Braves won a World Series, and that's been it. You know, Atlanta made it. The Falcons made it 1 year, and they lost to John Elway. You know, and that's been it. The Hawks made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and got swept last year. You know, that's been it. That's about as close as he's going to get is what happened last year, I think, making it to the Eastern Conference Finals and falling short against LeBron. He's never, you know, I don't think Atlanta will ever be able to get past LeBron out of the East, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, there's, 15 other teams that can say the same thing in the Eastern Conference, so it's not a bad thing, but if he wants a legit chance at winning a title, I think he would be better off going to San Antonio.
In about 5 years, the NBA is going to look a lot different. Probably no LeBron James, no Carmelo Anthony. If so, just limited roles at that point. So we're going to see the NBA look a lot different. We have so many organizations and young franchises that I am just super excited about. Minnesota Timberwolves, even the Utah Jazz, I like the way that they're going. The Boston Celtics, of course. I mean, there's just so many teams that is on the way up in about 3 or 4 years, maybe even before that. They're going to be making some big noise and saying who gets out of what conference. And it's going to be a big part to who these guys draft, because that's what we're seeing. Most of these teams develop their talent when they go out there and draft, and that's really special when these teams can build the draft picks and develop them instead of just going out and getting big name in free agency. On the flip side of the conference finals, we have the Eastern side, and that's Cleveland and Toronto. We know less about this series because we've played one game less. We've only had one game so far. Game two will be tipping off tonight in about an hour and a half or so. What the first game told us, if that stays true, this is going to be another quick series for the Cavaliers, who've already swept the first two rounds against the Pistons and the Hawks, and now looking to do the same against the Toronto Raptors after going up big after the first game, 115-84.
They got a better challenge in the first two rounds from the Pistons and the Hawks than they did the Raptors in game one, which is pretty telling. You know, the Raptors had two pretty tough series against the Pacers and really against the Heat. You know, that was a
seven games.
Yeah, I think the one the Pacers was it a six or seven?
Seven.
They were both seven. Yeah, so this team's just tired. You know, they're running into the best team in the East. You know, there was two plays last night in that game that really stood out to me was LeBron going on pick and rolls. Okay, the guy had to make a decision when LeBron went on the pick and roll, do you guard LeBron and, you know, and leave a man wide open for three, or do you guard the guy for three and then leave LeBron wide open for the basket? You know, it's really a no-win situation. I think I'm not sure who the shooter was. It was either Love or
J.R. Smith.
Is it J.R. Smith? Thompson, he's not
Channing,
a three-point
Channing Fry?
Yeah, Channing Fry is shooting like 50. He's shooting like 53% from three in the playoff loss. So do you leave him open for three, or do you guard LeBron? I mean, you obviously have to guard LeBron, because if you don't guard LeBron, it's a wide-open dunk. But then when you guard LeBron, you're leaving a 50% shooter wide open for three. I mean, it's just hard. It's just hard to defend them. The way Cleveland's shooting the ball, it's going to be a really great series potentially between them and Golden State, the way both those teams can shoot and score. You know, they both have superstar players. I'm kind of ready for that series to get here. You know, all due respect to Oklahoma City, especially, and to a lesser degree, Toronto. But I really, you know, that series is going to be a pretty crazy series, I think, with the way both teams are shooting lights out. They're both really just pretty much well-oiled machines at this point. And, you know, Toronto, you know, this is a step forward for them. You know, as a franchise, it really reminds me of the Hawks last year. You know, the Hawks had 2 6-game series in their first two rounds. So the Raptors had 2 7-game series in their first two rounds before running into the Cavs. And Atlanta got swept last year. And I think Toronto will probably get swept this year. It's just the way Cleveland's playing right now. I think Atlanta was more of a is going to end up being a bigger challenge than the Raptors. But I could say the Raptors could win Game Three, but if they don't win Game Three, then there's no way they're going to win Game Four, I don't think. And you know, Atlanta had chances to win Games 1, 3, and 4. So it'll be. You can't just count Toronto out of winning a game or two in this series, but. You know, I think best-case scenario for the Raptors, they win one game in this series, but I think it'll probably be a sweep.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and the Cavaliers in the playoffs so far are shooting better three-point percentage than any other team, and that includes Golden State.
Yeah.
I mean, last night was sort of an off night for them, and they still hit 7 out of 20 for 35%. But
that's
the danger, man. Like you mentioned, you got LeBron in a pick-and-roll spot, and if you take him, you're going to leave that guy – open it up at the corner or at the arc for three. So you can't really do that. So you have to pick and choose who you're going to go with. And this Toronto team, I mean, they're so tired. Before this series started, they had already played 14 games compared to 8 for the Cavaliers.
Right.
That's crazy. That's a lot of less rest than the Cavaliers have, of course, having pretty much a week off after every series. But Toronto, this is a team, we saw them in the first series against the Pacers, really trying to find their identity as a team in the playoffs, because we know how good they were in the regular season. They had their first 50-win season in franchise history. It was a great year for the North. Now, the playoffs start, they look like a totally different team. They look confused, they don't know who they are, they don't know who should take the ball, who should be the shooter, they really, for a team that relied on Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan in the regular season, their fall guy in the playoffs so far have been Jonas Valanciunas, and he's out with an injury. He may be back Saturday for Game 3, but I don't think he's going to come back tonight. He's already been out for Game 1. That's a guy who they miss, who can get in there and get rebounds, rough it up for Tristan Thompson a little bit, and step out and has the ability to hit threes and you know, have a body-to-body blow with some of these other guys that they just don't have besides Biombo down in the post. So with that, Toronto has got to find a way to figure themselves out a little bit, because you don't have time to second guess every decision you make out there while you're playing the Cavaliers, who can just flip a button and go up by 20.
Right. Yeah. You got to be decisive. And, you know, I think they should take a page out of Atlanta's playbook and study that series, study what, you know, Detroit gave them some defensive time, you know. Yeah, I mean, Atlanta and Detroit both lost Game 4 by 1 point to the Cavs. So, I mean, you know, take what you can learn from those two series, and I think, you know, it's possible that they could win a game, maybe even two, but it's going to be tough. And if last night's any indicator, it'll be a pretty easy sweep, I think.
We'll see what Dwayne Casey and that team can draw up here in game two that tips off in about an hour or so. Hopefully, even if they don't get away with a W, they make it a closer game and they get a little bit of confidence and momentum going back home to game three, because that's what you really want. Even if you can't, you know, of course you want to get a game in Cleveland, but if you can't, you at least want to have some sort of confidence going back home to your fans, of course, and having your own core, you're back home, you get some rest, you get back in your own bed a little bit, you get back in your routine, and you go back and you think about how you played, how well you played in game two. That's going to play big dividends in game three if they can get away with that here tonight and maybe, hopefully, tie up the series at one apiece.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'm pulling for them. I'm not a huge Cleveland fan. Yeah, I'm pulling for the upset, but I'm just not very optimistic. But yeah, it would be good for that franchise if the first two games are somewhat close. I mean, if game two is somewhat close, at least, you know, the crowd's definitely gonna be a lot more into it. You know, if they get blown out in game two, then, you know, how excited is the crowd really gonna be for game three? You know, if the crowd's not really into
it. I don't know, man. Have you seen the North? Have you seen Jurassic Park when they're right, man?
Yeah, they're good. They're good, passionate fans. No doubt about it. They'll be fired up. But I just think, if it's a close game tonight, or even if they, obviously if they win, you know, they'll definitely be fired up. But even if it's a close game tonight, the fans would really, really be into it, and that would help them, you know, potentially steal game three.
You mentioned this a little bit earlier, how the Celtics ended up with the third pick in this year's draft by the way of the lottery, getting their way into the top three picks. The 76ers end up winning the number one overall pick, and that, of course, you know, for the first time in this whole process series, they ended up with the number one pick, and that the first thing people thought of when they got that was Sam Hinkie. This is a guy who's going to every corner of the street saying, "That's right, that was me. I did that. You're welcome," because now they get the chance to pick maybe a guy that can change the face of that franchise, and they start building momentum. This is a few weeks back when we talked about Sam Hinkie stepping down and having the Colangelo father-son team running that organization. I told you, Clay, that things were probably on the way up a little bit, and now they get the number one overall pick. They can get Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram one, and maybe things are starting to take up the right way.
Maybe, yeah. That would be huge. They can get Ben Simmons. They drafted a couple big men in the last few years, I believe. I know they drafted the guy from Kansas who's never played. Maybe he'll eventually play. Is he going to play next year?
He's supposed to be back. Joel Embiid's supposed to be back. They have a guy overseas who they drafted who hasn't come over yet. He's supposed to come over as well. So all their lottery picks are supposed to be on the floor this next season.
Okay. Well, that's huge. Huge for that team. Yeah, I think he's definitely drafted Ben Simmons. I know he could play the point. You know, he's like a Magic Johnson type. He's like a 6'8 point guard, but you know, I don't know if you leave him at the point. But yeah, you definitely could draft him, a scorer. You got your young bigs. They could definitely build something. They could be like a young, you know, like the Atlanta Hawks was a few years ago. They went, you know, go from 13 wins to you know, sneaking into the playoffs in a few years. I could see Philadelphia making that tough turnaround.
You know, and listen,
they'll definitely have the scout to do it in a few, not next year, not this year, not next year, or maybe the year after that. I could see them sneaking in.
Let me ask you this. Do you think the process worked? Can we say that yet, or do we have to wait for a playoff series?
Well, you never have to worry. But, I mean, I guess it's your definition of working. You know, in 3 years, if they make the playoffs, would you say, well, it worked? You know.
No, I think if you're in the East, and I mean, I know it's getting more competitive, but in 3 years, if you're in the East and you're a team that's who hasn't been to the playoffs in a while, you need to be in the next two or three for sure. They're not going to make it next season for sure, but you know, maybe, you know, because what's funny is all their draft picks they have in the lottery the last couple of years, they're going to be free agents next year.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have to sign them back, or they can walk off and go play with a good team who's committed to winning. I'm not saying the Sixers are not committed to winning now that they have decided to, you know, go on with the Colangelos and things are up on the uptick. But obviously other organizations would be happy to have some of these guys. You know, if Jahlil Okafor gets in the right team at the right spot, he's a guy who can get his mind right with a different organization and be surrounded by a winning mentality. Because half of these guys on the team are just psyched to be an NBA player. They don't have as much of a skill set as we see all these other teams have coming off the bench. Like we mentioned, the Spurs and Oklahoma City.
Yeah, they don't know how to win. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Definitely some young, promising talent. You know, you assume the pick's going to be probably Ben Simmons, although Ingram's a fine player, you know, in his own right. But I would probably go with Simmons because I think he has a little bit slightly better upside. It can definitely cause some excitement. Well, whoever they pick, you know, will cause some excitement and maybe bring some life into the franchise.
What's funny is I'll tell you who the right pick is and which one they're going to make. The right pick will be Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He's better character guy. He is a much better shooter, which is exactly where this league is going. You have to be able to shoot no matter what position you're at. You have to hit high percentage of your shots. Simmons, of course, is not as good of a shooter. They're going to draft Ben Simmons because he's a big name. He's a guy who's been really hyped up for the last 3 years before he even got to college. And they'll pretty much just ignore what happened at LSU with him not getting any kind of postseason play with the Big Dance or, you know, not even playing at the Combine, which really I think would hurt him. But a lot of people don't do that anymore. A lot of these star players, the agents tell them don't play in the Combine because the last thing they want to think of is a great, you know, showcase by you. But if you go out there and you play against all these other guys and you don't have a good game, that's the last thing they're going to think of. Or the first thing they're going to think of going into making their pick. So they're going to make that pick because it's a big name. They're going to get fans excited. They think, you know what, we got the first overall pick. We got the Colangelos. We got Ben Simmons. Maybe we'll be pretty good. That's who they're going to end up picking, I think. But if you're Los Angeles and you have the second pick, you got to be psyched because no matter what, you're going to have a good guy. If you get Simmons at two, if you get Brandon Ingram, which will be an amazing pick for them, then you're really happy because you got Luke Walton going to be your next head coach this season. You got a lot of young talent, and you get possibly Brandon Ingram, one of the best shooters in this draft.
Step up and take Kobe's role.
And then you go out and you get free agents that they're probably they're not going to get a ton this year, but they're going to get some guys, maybe even a DeMar DeRozan, a guy like that, or maybe they get Hashaun Whiteside from Miami. They're going to get some names this year in free agency,
DeRozan,
I think.
Would him and Ingram be two similar players? Ingram's bigger, I know.
That's the thing. It would pretty much be the same guy. And it'd be tough to play them at the same time unless you went really, really small and tried to stretch it out like Golden State does.
Right.
But that's a guy who is a free agent. He wants to come back home. Los Angeles would look to probably take him both of those if they had the chance, because this is something they haven't.
I think it would benefit Los Angeles more if they drafted Simmons because he's a bigger guy. But I don't think Simmons will be there at number two.
Either way, they're going to be set. They're going to be excited for either one they get. It's almost like they can't lose, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's kind of like last year, we're going back to Milwaukee and 76ers. Either one was going to get... Jahlil Okafor, Minnesota. Minnesota and Phoenix, Philadelphia, because you're going to get Karl-Anthony Towns or Jahlil Okafor.
Right.
So no matter what, the top two teams are going to be set with a really good pick, and I'm sure Boston, Danny Ainge, he can come up with something. They may look at possibly trading that number three pick for a big-name guy on draft night, or they can take a guy and do what they've been doing with Brad Stevens, which is an excellent job of developing their young talent.
Absolutely, yeah. I would just trust Brad Stevens and let him pick somebody and let him keep building that team.
And you can – this is another team, Clay, can go out. And they're in the Kevin Durant sweepstakes as well.
Oh, wow. That would be something.
He's been noted to have a love for the city of Boston. He looks up, of course, to the amazing history of the organization and the tradition that comes with being a Celtic. The only thing is the big selling point with Kevin Durant, not to get crazy off topic here, but – he's going to look to win now. The next 2-3 seasons, which team can get me a championship in 3 seasons? He doesn't want to have a process like he's already been through with Oklahoma City if he does decide to leave.
Yeah. You know, that would definitely be the biggest caveat for Boston. I agree. But you never know.
Which makes San Antonio look a little bit sweeter.
Yeah, San Antonio's probably his best bet if he wants to win now. Either stay put or go to San Antonio.
Or Golden State.
Yeah, maybe Los Angeles.
Hey, he could go to Los Angeles, but it could be the Clippers.
Yeah.
Sign and trade Kevin Durant for Blake Griffin.
Ooh, yeah. I'd rather have Durant for sure.
Blake goes home to Oklahoma. They get a somewhat of a star guy in return, and Kevin Durant is in the big city of L.A. with his friend, Chris Paul.
But then what do you do with Serge Ibaka?
He's going to end up being released or traded at some point. His game is diminishing by each and every minute he plays. He's becoming less of a good shooter. He's taking more shots than he should. He's not making any of those shots. He only ended up with 3 points last night.
Yeah.
We've really been exposed to his defense or lack of defense this postseason when it comes to guarding skilled big men. This was a guy you hung your hat on saying, well, at least we have Ibaka on the defensive side. He's looked to be one of the worst big men that they have. You'd rather play Adams or Cantor. You would never say that 3 years ago. So this is a guy whose style of play and skill set are diminishing. And he's almost, I think he's almost thinking too much while he's out there, because you see when he's shooting, he's left wide open. They obviously don't have any confidence in his shot, the defender that is. He takes a lot of time to shoot, and that's because he's probably overthinking the way he's going to shoot the ball and ends up missing most of those shots. So Serge is not really that big of a deal with Oklahoma City. They would find a way to get that all to work. I mean, I'm not sure even if it does work. If this is all hypothetical anyway, but if they do decide to get that sign and trade done, they would find a way to, probably expedite Serge Ibaka to possibly even a third team to facilitate the trade.
Oh, wow. I can see it. I can definitely see it. All hypothetical, like you said, but yeah. It's all interesting. Yeah.
That's what makes it so much fun, is all this it really could possibly happen. All this crazy stuff we're throwing out there. It's not super high-fetched.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. It happens every year.
So, Clay, I'm going to get to just a couple more things here before we close out today's edition of the Sports Report podcast. That is the EA coaching circle. We have a few more jobs open up, and a few more have been able to sign their man. Even today, we've had a couple, at least one for sure, hiring out there in the NBA coaching world. I want to get back to a guy that we both are really high on, who Larry Bird decided to promote as from assistant to head coach, and that is Nate McMillan, a guy we, of course, know from the Seattle Supersonics, and when he coached in Portland for the Portland Trailblazers, been an assistant ever since for Frank Vogel and the Indiana Pacers. He's been promoted to head coach for a 3-year deal. Imagine that. What did Larry Bird say in his press conference that he thinks the average, the time span for a coach should be 3 years? That's exactly what they signed Nate McMillan to. So, Nate, good job on getting the promotion. You have 3 years to get it done.
Well, he's done nothing but win everywhere he's been. So, he's going to have more talent, arguably more talent, in Indiana than he has in some of his Portland teams. So, I've always thought he was kind of an overachiever. This Indiana team still got talent. They need to add some pieces, obviously. They were, the 7th seed this year. But, yeah, they're still, not that long ago, they were the number 1 seed in the East. So, it'll be interesting, but I like the hire for sure. I mean, I thought they should have kept their head coach that they had. What was his name?
Frank Vogel.
Vogel, yeah. But
Jerry Seinfeld.
But if they were going to – Jerry Seinfeld, yeah, that's a good comparison. They look a lot alike. But if you're going to hire somebody else, then I think McMillan was definitely couldn't do much better. Especially him being familiar, it's kind of like when the Hawks hired Larry Drew a few years ago. McMillan's a much bigger name, but he's already there. He's already familiar with the players. I think it'd be a pretty smooth transition, and it could possibly be an upgrade I think they wouldn't have hired him if they didn't think it'd be an upgrade. So, I'm a big Nate McMillan fan. So, I think it's a good hire.
I love Nate McMillan as well. There's just one problem I kind of have with this. You're Larry Bird, and you fire Frank Vogel. You really don't fire him, but you don't re-sign him. When he overachieved with this roster the last 2 years, getting into the playoffs and winning games, almost advancing to the next round to play the Miami Heat, by the way. But you don't re-sign him, and you decide to... And the first thing you said in your news conference was, we need a change of voice around here. We need a new voice around here in the locker room. Well, Nate McMillan's been on staff and in the locker room for the last 3.5 years, 4 years, whatever you want to call it. So it's not really a new voice. All these guys have heard his name, been coached up by him in the offseason, of course, on the bench, in the locker room. Not really a new voice.
Yeah. That is interesting. But, I mean, yeah, you say that. Yeah, I agree. But you know Vogel was doing 90% of the talking. So, I don't know, maybe Larry Brown liked what he heard from Nate McMillan, you know. But, that is a good point. But, you know, Vogel was doing most of the talking, if not all the talking. So, yeah. I see your point, but at the same time, McMillan will probably have some different ideas and different philosophies and different things to say. And so, you know, I don't think Larry Brown should have ever fired Vogel. You know, I really don't know what the deal is. So I think he's been a McMillan fan for a while now. I really do. I think Larry Brown's kind of wanted to hire him. That's just my gut feeling that he's kind of wanted to hire Nate maybe for, you know, the last year or so.
And a couple other things to get to. You know, of course, pro Nate McMillan. Hope he has a successful run in Indiana. Gets them back to one of the top couple seeds in the East. But moving on, we have a sign today that the Orlando Magic, who, by the way, they had their head coach last week resign, pretty much breaking up with the team before they broke up with him. That was Scott Skiles deciding to resign as head coach. Kind of took everybody by surprise, even your boy here, myself.
What, after 1 year?
It was, a year and a half maybe, because he came in interim and then he signed as a full deal, I think.
Yeah.
But now he decided to resign. Him in the front office really didn't gel well, which if you're Orlando, you have some front office members from the San Antonio staff. So, of course, you have great voices up in the booth making some calls. So, and the one thing they disagreed on was Elfrid Payton being the point guard of the future for him. So that's one thing they didn't want to do, was agree on the situation to trade Payton, and he didn't want to play Payton. So ends up resigning. Today, the Orlando Magic announced that they have gone out and signed Frank Vogel, former Indiana Pacers coach we just mentioned, as their new head coach.
Wow, good hire. I'm glad he already landed on his feet and got that job, because he definitely deserved it.
One week out in the, 2 weeks out in the cold without a job, and he goes out and gets a hot spot in Orlando on the beach.
A good hire. Yeah, good place to be. It's actually kind of in the middle of the state, but you got Disney World at least. It's not too far from the beach, but anyways, it's a good hire. I like it. Got a lot of young talent there. And, if they're patient with him, I think he could build him into a playoff team.
So what it's all going to be about is developing their young talent they have there. They have Oladipo. They have Aaron Gordon. They have a couple pieces they can develop and build around the next couple of years.
Franchises are not patient anymore. I mean, they've never. I mean, there's always, it's always been like that. But it seems like the last 5-10 years, it's just like, okay, you don't get it done in 1 year, okay, you're out. You know, 2 years, you're out. I mean, franchises have got to start being more patient. It just aggravates me when they let good coaches go after a year or two. You know what I mean? It's just like, we got to have a little bit more patience. Look at the roster. I mean, not every coach is going to be, you know, a John Wooden. I mean, you know, you got to have, I mean, yeah, they're great coaches, but you still have to build your franchise. They're going to have to have some patience. And I hope they're patient with Frank Vogel, because he can turn them into a playoff team. But it may take 3 or 4 years, you know. It ain't going to take 1 or 2 years. It's going to take, you know, 4 or 5 years maybe, but you just got to be patient.
I think Orlando is psyched to have Frank Vogel really fall in their lap, because this is a guy, of course, we've known his great success in Indiana, really defensive mindset.
I like Scott Skiles, but Vogel is definitely an upgrade, no doubt about it.
Right. He brings that toughness and that defensive mindset to Orlando that a young, inexperienced team, they, you know, that lacks the discipline, they're going to have that with Frank Vogel. Yeah. And I think, and this is a team, Clay, who were really on their way the first, you know, 15, 20 games of the season, was really on their way to making the playoffs and having a pretty decent year until it fell apart right before the All-Star break and then after as well. And it really hit them low and really derailed their season. But you get a guy in Frank Vogel who's going to, you know, do right by the team, preach the right fundamentals and discipline as well. So they're definitely it's going to be interesting who they get in the draft this year and if they get some people. You know, maybe they can go out. Their biggest name in free agency is to go out and get Al Horford. They sign him. They get a good draft pick. Who knows? They're going to make the playoffs next year. In 2-3 years, they could be up there with Indiana and Nate McMillan.
You never know.
A couple other things to get to. The New York Knicks, it was kind of reported out there last night. This, I don't really go by, I have one source that I know for sure is legit, to, you know, actually absolutely believe it, and I haven't seen them post on this yet, so I'm not going to say it's official, but the New York Knicks are in talks, serious negotiations with former Phoenix Suns head coach Jeff Hornacek, who I'm a huge fan of. All these coaches, man, Nate McMillan, Frank Vogel, Jeff Hornacek, huge fans of all these guys. He's a guy who's obviously looking closer and closer to getting the head coaching job in New York, who really came out of nowhere because we all, you know, Phil Jackson was off, you know, in some island somewhere celebrating his terrific, you know, regular season he had with the Knicks. So he's off on vacation somewhere. All these head coaches are firing and resigning and being let go, and he's just, you know, not really collecting any interviews. And Jeff Hornacek, a guy who's been out there, you know, really took a year off, just like Scott Brooks did and Tom Thibodeau did last year. Ever since he got fired in the interim in the regular season this year, when Earl Watson stepped in, he's been kind of just stepping back from the game a little bit and watching all these other teams play and getting some notes to make himself to bring to whatever team he goes to. And hopefully this works out, because I love Jeff Hornacek. He's a great guy. It's just kind of a bad situation if you don't succeed in a year. Phil Jackson decides to leave to go to Los Angeles. Are they going to look for a change in the head coaching job? You know, is this only a 1 year deal, basically, is what I'm saying, if things don't work out the way they want to this year?
Yeah. I was honestly expecting New York to keep the interim coach.
Kurt Rambis.
Rambis, yeah, just because he's had, you know, coaching experience and he's kind of a Phil Jackson guy. But, I'm a big Hornacek fan, and I think it can be a good hire. Not a home run. I mean, not nothing that's going to get the New York crowd just, you know, really fired up about, but you know, who else was out there at this point, you know what I mean? It's probably the best that they could do. So, you know, you hope that, like I just mentioned, that they're patient with him, you know, and give him a chance. That would be interesting to see. I don't know. I figured they would just ride Rambis, you know, for this year or so, for next year at least. But be interesting.
Now, none of this is official. Kurt Rambis is still right now as considered to be a favorite to land the job for.
It's not official yet.
They're in serious talks. It's certainly looking like it's going to go that way for Jeff Hornacek. However, nothing's been signed or official, so who knows? I don't believe it until it's actually done. That's my thing. So a lot. It'd be in New York. It'd be in Phil Jackson. Who knows what crazy mysteries could happen to, you know, make this not come true and it end up signing somebody like I don't know, Robert Horry to coach.
Yeah. There you go. Big shot.
Yeah, got plenty of championships.
He does.
And one more coach to get to, Clay. We're looking like we are headed to the finalization of a contract between the Houston Rockets and Mike D'Antoni.
I knew it.
This would be, to me, a perfect fit. It's Phoenix point two, when he had Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Sean Marion, Grant Hill, all those guys. You come back to Houston. Even if you don't sign Dwight Howard back, which obviously, I mean, if you get D'Antoni, you might even look to keep Dwight Howard because it fits his system a little bit. But if you don't sign him back, you still have James Harden. You have all these guys who can stretch the floor and shoot threes and run and gun just like it did in Phoenix. They can get some guys in free agency to hopefully build that around as well. It's nothing official yet. They're actually conducting a second interview today with Charlotte Hornets assistant Steve Silas, of course, the son of Paul Silas, who's been in the league for the last 16 years, building reputations with many other organizations, including the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors, before coming to Charlotte with Steve Clifford.
Yeah. Could be a good hire. Obviously got the family name. But, the D'Antonio really makes too much sense in a way. I mean, he's had, this will be, what, his third head coach job? Or fourth? Let's see. Just his third, right?
That'll be his third head coaching. He's been an assistant last couple of years. Right. But he's been in Los Angeles, been in New York, been in Phoenix.
Cool. Okay, yeah. I forgot about Los Angeles.
This would be his fourth. This would be his fourth job.
Well, he's done really bad his last two stops, but this, you know, Houston would definitely be his best overall team with James Harden leading the way, obviously. So, yeah, I think they can get a more athletic center. I think they'd let Dwight go. And it could potentially, you know, be. It just seems like a good fit, probably because he did so good when he was at Phoenix. I guess Phoenix and Houston, you know, are, you know, similar cities, you know, out west, you know, desert. He just seems like a desert guy. I don't know, but I think it'd be a good fit, and it's really not surprising that he's the league candidate. I think he'll get the job, and It could be a home run hire, or it could be like his last two jobs and be a dismal hire. But I actually think he would do better in Houston than they did in New York or Los Angeles.
Here's the thing. The ultimate goal, and this could actually happen, this has been talked with everyone that's been involved with the deals to be a head coach and part of this whole negotiation here, is that Houston, with Daryl Morey running that organization, they are looking at signing both of these guys to get Mike D'Antoni to be the head coach and lead assistant, Steve Silas, who's not the lead assistant in Charlotte. That's Patrick Ewing. So he's not even a lead assistant yet. He's made all these great relationships with everyone over the league, will be in just the third or fourth guy down the bench. So this will be his first lead assistant job. If you can find a way, which it could really happen, both of these guys, sign them both to deals and to be, you know, head coach and assistant head coach, I mean, what better way to get it done?
That's a good point.
And if James Harden and the team decide to have another surviving council round where they all vote off the head coach after five games, you got Steve Silas there.
Yeah, potentially good head coach. Yeah.
So I hear that we may have another podcast for you guys this week. We may have our good friend Carter Holtze come on and be a part of a separate podcast. Hopefully tomorrow, just have a kind of a fun, loose podcast with him, finally get him to be part of the show here and talk about the Alabama situation and also maybe the San Antonio Spurs. He's a big Spur guy, Tim Duncan guy. So maybe just get his opinions, rack his brain a little bit on what's going on in the world of sports. It'd be cool to have him finally get a part of be a part of the show.
Yeah, I think we can get him on for a 20, 30 minute, you know, a little podcast or something. I think it'd work good.
I think so too. A little short, mini podcast coming your way. Hopefully tomorrow we'll have all three of us locked in for a sports report podcast for you guys. Well, Clay, I enjoyed it as always. Thank you so much for always being a big part of this show and coming on with me and talking the crazy world of sports.
It is a crazy, wacky world. There's no doubt about it.
Remember to check out replays and archive episodes of the Sports Report podcast on iTunes. Also check us out on Facebook and Twitter at the Sports Report on Facebook and the Sport Report on Twitter.